Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy. Welcome to Love What You Play. Today we'll be featuring a talk from our 2018 Youth Sports Summer Summit, available at full of forloveofthegame.ca. Our mission is to help organizations, coaches, and sports leaders develop programs to ensure kids love the game more at the end of a season than they did at the beginning. My next guest is Nate Leslie, a gentleman that I've gotten to know quite well over the last 6 or 7 years. Started out with him doing skills development with my son, and we got to know each other through a whole bunch of various other hats. He wears many hats, and I'm actually going to pull up a piece of paper to recite some of them, and I'll get him to expand on them a little bit more detail. He's the founder of Leslie Global Sports with an online training platform called Learn to Play Hockey. He's the HP lead for hockey at the Richmond Oval. That's where I first got to know him. The West Coast Hockey, our West Coast Prep Camp director. He also has initiatives that continues to do so. I'll get him to expand on a little bit more. Hockey in New Zealand. Did a documentary of hockey in Mongolia. Former professional hockey player in Europe for 7 years. Played junior hockey. And we'll get into his new initiatives that he's starting to work with. Former professional hockey players as they transition to normal life, as well as other platforms. So thanks for joining us, Nate. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your crazy schedule to spend time to chat.
You know what, Glenn, it's my pleasure, and I might have to get you to repeat all that to my wife, because she'd think I'm a pretty interesting character when we start to add those things up. I must be getting old.
The big unknown and the big question is, how do you find time to do all that stuff?
Yeah, well, how do I find time to throw in part-time stay-at-home dad as well to that these days? Not multitasking. That's my number one thing right now, is multitasking is out, and being present is in. I have my prep camp book, my life after hockey book, my Leslie Global Sports book, so that sort of my journals are there together. I try to compartmentalize my life as much as I can.
So what percentage you basically do it seasonally? So prep camp would be like the summertime frame, spring would be New Zealand, and then you have your fall programs and what have you?
Yeah, one of the biggest changes that I've made is kind of compartmentalizing the year from a marketing standpoint too, so that, you know, I'm spending the right time of year focused on the right thing that's around the corner and trying to spread that out. So, yeah, you know, we've got a small team of coaches here in Vancouver that do our coach mentorship and online or on the ice skills training through September to March, and then the spring we have spring training, but in the spirit of not wanting kids to burn out, where we're not involved in the spring hockey world per se, we just kind of do a once a week program and some off ice training through the high performance program and our fun trip to New Zealand. And then right now is about to be, tonight's my last night on the ice. And then the calm before the storm, about 6 weeks off here before our summer camp season starts.
Cool. So in your experience, and you're wearing, I know that we talked about a few years back that you're no longer actually coaching hockey teams and had in past, focusing mainly with the skill development side of it. But you've interacted with coaches and parents and many, many, many players, many high-level players. What would you say are the top three issues that they're facing today?
Well, one of the reasons I intentionally step back from coaching a team, I guess, is I'll start with that because it'll address some of the challenges is, you know, asking myself, how is my time best spent? And my time best spent, I believe, is working with a top-down approach, so that I'm in contact with more coaches and more executives from minor hockey associations. And so from the skill development side and the coach mentorship and coach clinic side, I get to be in contact with more coaches and hence help spread that message, our message and that of, you know, many governing bodies down through the players. The biggest two challenges that I see are early specialization / burnout in the same conversation, right? Because it's all connected. And not seeing the game through the eyes of the kids. So you need to coach an 8-year-old differently than you need to coach a 15-year-old high performance athlete. Not to say that they both shouldn't be fun and they both can't be organized and committed, but you know, and really focused. But you need young kids are being coached the way that those youth coaches are seeing sort of a pro player coached, and that's sort of that's one of the couple of the biggest challenges I see.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest frustrations I have, especially with the clinics where the coaches start talking systems, tactics, strategies, but that's not really applicable until the kids get much older in their age groups, where they really should be focusing on core skills. And the greatest coaches of all time didn't even go down that path 100%. They focus on life skills. And that's, you know, what really we should be doing as well. So,
I'll add to that. You know, when we're looking for coaches to help us out, when I see that someone's in education, whether they want to be a teacher or a phys ed teacher specifically or not, the idea that coaching is educating, some of the greatest youth coaches and some of the greatest help that minor hockey or youth sport coaches can get is engaging teachers. I always think, well, what would this 7-year-old be doing in school right now, right? And it involves a lot of learning through play and exploration, et cetera. And then they get to their sport and it becomes a different environment. So I try to come back to what would the environment be like in a great engaging classroom session? And let's try to recreate that on the field or on the ice.
Yeah, exactly. Great concept. So what then can we do? We've got the issues, and what I really want to spend more time in and on all these reach outs to all the amazing guests we've got. What can we do to ensure that a kid loves a game, the sport, activities more at the end of a season than they did at the beginning? What are some of the things that you're doing to ensure that? Because I know that from past experience, my son being part of a lot of your programs and many of the players are referred, they just love being part of it. So what do you do that makes that happen?
I think a theme that I'm working on that I learned in a leadership conference this past year or two, that's not a new one, but so valuable, and it's applicable to the pro players that we're working with in our Life After Hockey program. It's applicable to you and I as dads and our wives as wives and mothers, and it's applicable to these kids, is recognizing the sources of motivation, and those being four sources of motivation: reward, recognition, mastery, and service. The reward and recognition piece is important. Everyone wants to be the big goal scorer. Everyone enjoys being on top, enjoys the scoreboard. I get that. But they're connected to the ego and in large part completely out of our control. What others think of us, what others think of your youth team that you're coaching, whether you have a banner or not, is connected to the ego. The other two, mastery and service, being intrinsically motivated, are sustainable, far more sustainable. And it turns out, so let me phrase that in another way. Mastery, the pure joy of getting better at something. If we can coach encouraging mastery, knowing that we'll probably never get there, but encourage kids to love the pure joy of getting better, and service, community, team, the pleasure of being a part of something bigger and greater than ourselves, fortunately, performance goes up and sustainability goes up when we focus on mastery and service. So if we can move away as coaches from the reward and recognition piece and catch kids doing something well, catch them improving a certain skill and encouraging them that that's what it's really about, and creating an environment where they want to be part of that community, that service piece where their contribution really matters. In my own life, in my own family life, in my own personal life, the same motivations exist. So I think that is the number one thing that we can do, where they are realizing that they've improved over the season and they've been a contributor in one way or another, every player being different, to the team. I think you have a deeper engagement in the sport and a pure love of the right things that are sustainable
Yeah, and then those things that you learn on the latter two, the mastery, would carry forward not just in the sport itself, but beyond that. Like once you've graduated, whether you just play until, hopefully you play until you're 18, like many of us did when we grew up, and some going on beyond that, but where we've got run into the issue in sport right across the world is the early attrition, 13, 14 years old, where 70% of kids are pulling out of the stream, but they're missing out on, and that 5 years is where you're kind of zeroing in on. That's where they learn most of that.
Yeah,
the social development aspect and the emotional intelligence and that whole, you know, love for activity so that they're ultimately active well beyond their, you know, high school years.
Yeah, and we'll get into it in a little bit. The Transitioning Athlete Network and Life After Hockey program that we're starting. I had a workshop the other day with one participant having 480 games in the NHL played, other guys having a junior B and a junior A career. And part of the hardest part of the transition for them is the identity, the loss of identity, right? They've put all these eggs in one basket. And even if they have a great career, one day comes and it's over, so the identity's gone. And if they have a really rocky career and they're still focused on their identity, that's really hard to deal with as well. So as we're talking to these adults with high level, national team level sport careers, and we're talking about the importance of letting go of that identity and realizing I'm Nate Leslie, I have something to offer the world, rather than I'm Nate Leslie, I'm a hockey player, it's the only thing I've ever known, it's my identity, how could I ever dream of being anyone else? Heads were nodding when we were talking about intrinsic motivation and mastery and service and moving on to something else in their lives where the focus on the reward or in the recognition of being an athlete isn't their number one motivator. And so this journey I'm on right now, the same lesson is applicable to the 9-year-olds I'll be on the ice with this evening and the 480 game NHLer that I was chatting with last week. And it's, so it's just at the foundation of everything that of who I'm becoming as a leader and a coach, and so it's just I'm all in on it right now.
Cool. Did this kind of evolve from as a result of your post life, like when you left the professional stream, you got into the development, coaching, what have you? But was there stuff like that you were trying to figure out how to make that transition that you're now bringing that expertise to the forefront now?
Oh, for sure. When I introduced myself after the players had a chance to introduce each other the other day, actually, I told the story of being in the Swiss National A League 1 year, one of the highest levels in the world, and working under the table for what turned out to be on my first night at $1 an hour in a bar on the downtown east side of New York City, wondering what happened. I have a degree. I was in the Swiss National A League 12 months ago, and I'm working for a dollar an hour here tonight in this restaurant. And so I joke, but there's a truth in every joke that I finished playing and really had no idea how the real world worked after 4 years of junior, 7 years of pro, and a degree. And I think athletes, for better or for worse, and for worse sometimes, live in a bubble. And, we're told when high-performance athletes are told when to eat, when to sleep, how hard to work, what you got to do. And that is great. It serves a purpose in that environment. But we are, and the higher level of the athlete, the less they're involved in the real world, how to pay your cell phone bill, how to budget, how to network, how to plan for your next career. And so definitely as an athlete, I went through that, and I've worn many, many hats to get to the hats that I wear now. And I think that one of the reasons I've taken this sport and branched out in many different areas as a self-employed, as an entrepreneur is, I, as an athlete, I had a hard time dealing with so much being out of my control. Could have the greatest game of my life for one coach, play a very similar game, you know, a month later for a different coach and have very different results. And so in terms of, you know, sitting on the bench and things feeling out of my control. So I decided to take control of my own life, but also realize that, that players need a service. And I hope we're not getting off track here, but I suggested to the guys the other day that I think professional sport exists in self-preservation mode. Coaches, management, clubs, it's a business at that level. And we as players are a part of it, but everyone is looking out, you know, for their own career, and rightly so. Every coach who has decisions to make has a team to pick and wins to get. And so as athletes, all of a sudden you've been sort of protected in this bubble, and then all of a sudden it's done and you're completely outside of that bubble thinking, you know, where am I? What options do I have? So it's all connected because, you know, for the love of the game is growing life skills and hopefully encouraging kids to play multiple sports so that their entire identity isn't connected to this one thing that they've done, that they've been probably quite good at. And all of a sudden that's gone. So, this need for, on the youth level, encouraging coaches and parents to be involved in multiple sports, encouraging the kids to be involved in multiple sports so that their identity is broader, you know, be involved in music, be involved in drama, play multiple sports, take holidays and don't even think about sports, go and play outside. And then it moves along the higher level you get, encouraging them that, you know, this is going to end soon and we want to have well-rounded citizens that can transition and contribute. So I think that was my long-winded answer to say it's all connected and it all started with my own experience. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in terms of your own experience, because you were a hockey player for the junior, when did, like, what other sports did you play as a kid? And when did you decide that hockey was the path you wanted to go down?
Yeah, I played, grew up in small town Manitoba and a little bit in Switzerland where my father was a coach and my mother was a teacher. So, artificial ice, but it came in October. So, you know, hockey in the winter, baseball in the summer as a kid. And then in high school, fell in love with volleyball, soccer to an extent, and badminton and track and field. So did all of those in senior high. Grade 12, I had a chance to make a tier 2 junior in the Manitoba Junior League and had to decide at that point, I had to give up volleyball. At the time, that was my other one where I don't think I had the future that I had in hockey, but it was grade 12 that I decided, okay, now I got to be a one sport athlete. Now that's 16, 17. That's not.
Yeah. 16, which is, seven, right? Is the age that's when it happened for me. But ironically, I wasn't the one sport. I specialized in two, football and rugby, when I was 18, and I played into collegiate levels until, you know, injuries prohibited me from continuing. But the fact that a 6, 7, and 8 year old kid will be not them picking the sport, but a parent encouraging them to play that sport based on pressure they're getting, they're taking away all that opportunity. We could beat that horse up to death, as the article that we've all seen and read and shared is. Kind of taking that whole wind out of their sails well before it should. So,
yeah. I'll add one short brief thing to that. Parents tell me, well, my son loves it. My daughter loves it. And they want to play. And I heard a coach say the other day, well, they love chocolate too, but you wouldn't give it to them every single day, right? At some point, we as the responsible adults need to be able, hey, that's great that you love it. Let's try to keep it that way, right? And limit it. So,
yeah. Well, I'm touching on that. My analogy is: does your kid love chocolate cake? Yeah. More often than not, almost every kid in the world loves chocolate cake. Would you let them eat it in one sitting? No. Yeah. Well, then you know everything is great in moderation, and that's where we kind of have to kind of bring it back. So it's getting there slowly but surely. Yeah. So what projects and initiatives are you working on second half going of 2018 going to 2019 to kind of instill where you're going?
Yeah, it is to, we have a great team of coaches on our Leslie Global Sports side. And so keeping that rolling and giving some of those coaches who have come so far in the last couple of years even more of the reins there, and growing our high performance program at the Oval, which has really kind of taken itself to the next level in the last year. Our West Coast Prep Camp is such a joy to be a part of, because I get to sit back and hire coaches so much more experienced and incredible at their craft than I. So continuing to empower them to take the lead and systemize that so that we make sure that we're providing a great service to the families who are willing to spend some of their summer with me. And yeah, I just ran my Life After Hockey workshop. We did a full day on last Thursday, and I wanted to get to that here as guys were coming back from their pro seasons in Europe. And my next goal is to have phase two in the fall. We have a little accountability follow-up in a few weeks, but we'll have another one in the fall. And we're really excited. The Western Hockey League Scholarship Fund has actually, education program has contacted us and wants to make that program available to all of their players who have come through their league. And we've actually connected with Vancouver Canucks alumni who see the value in it, as well as actually the Royal Bank of Canada, who actually has a division of hundreds of professional athletes that they manage their investments for, and they have a goal, similar reason you're doing this, to make their program more holistic and more healthy for their athletes. And so that's one of my big goals right now, is trying to reach through those channels who have access to athletes that we can help.
Wow. Sounds like you're going to be a wee bit busy, even more so than you have been.
You know what? It's read this the other day. If you're going to say yes to something, what are you saying no to, right? Because you can't just keep saying yes. Yeah. And so what we've been able to do is say yes to some pretty exciting things that really get me out of bed in the morning, as my best friend says, help me tap dance to work every day, and say no to the things that maybe I had to do in the beginning to kind of grind it out and get established. And that's a real luxury that we're enjoying, that we can really focus on the most meaningful work right now.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, so I got some kind of rapid fire-ish questions. What would be your favorite book for coaches?
For coaches. For hockey coaches, Ryan Walter and Mike Johnson did a book about 10 years ago. And of course, I'm just drawing the blank. And each chapter is an interview with a different NHL coach. And it was just a really great perspective. And one that I'm really enjoying that I'm reading right now is The Coach's Habit, it's called. It's actually a business leadership book, but The Coach's Habit, say less, listen more, and change the way you lead forever. The reason I was loving it was concrete steps, how to actually empower the athlete to help make their own decisions rather than an authoritative leadership style where we're continually telling them to what to do, what we think. It's more helping, you know, like personal coaching in life is helping athletes arrive at their own conclusions. So those I have recently read. And another outside the box one is, and I think you might have mentioned in our pre-call, is The Power of Why from Simon Sinek. Why are we doing what we're doing? So, right. You know, on top, that's what I've been reading in the last month, kind of since the winter season is done, and they're big picture things and not so sport coaching specific. So hopefully those are a couple good suggestions for your listeners.
Cool. With the book, Ryan Walter and Mike Johnson, I pulled up, I just went on Hockey Plays and Strategies. Does that ring a bell?
Is that the one? No, that one's very practical. There's another one that you'll find there. Their other one where they interview the coaches.
I'll do a little bit of digging. What are we going to do with all the speakers? We're going to tag on at the bottom, you know, resources and book references and what have you. As now that you're a parent, and your kids are how old now?
3 and 5 in a couple of weeks.
Okay, so 5-year-old, any interest in any sports so far?
I got a great clip from his preschool teacher with some awesome dance moves this morning, which was great to see. He loves playing, we call it tennis, whacking it back and forth out on the sidewalk. He will hit 80 balls in a row at the driving range, which really surprises me. The other day we were in a restaurant and there was basketball on one TV and hockey on the other. And I said, which one are you watching? And he said, basketball. And I said, oh, what do you like about basketball? And he said, Dad, I just don't like hockey as much as you do. Very insightful. All the power to you. If you want basketball, then that's what we'll do. But I am not in a rush to push him into organized sports right now. We're gonna let him figure it out here in the next little bit.
Have you read, or has your wife read, any books or magazines about youth sport parenting, or some tips and tricks that you would share with coaches that could share with their parents?
My wife is an occupational therapist now, but was at like 17, 18 years old running a community center day camp program. And when she sees the craziness of youth sports and then compares that to a rec center program where you get to dabble in lots of different things, that's the root, that's the influence that we're sort of getting from the family, is let's just try a bunch of things as long as we can, and eventually the gravitation will happen. But nothing top of mind for parents right now. I'm sorry.
Yep. Do you have a favorite TED talk? Doesn't even have to be sports specific. It's just more of a, what would you share?
You know what? I was just watching Simon Sinek the other day. I know bullying is close to your heart. There is an absolutely incredibly moving TED talk from the Vancouver-based poet who presented in the opening ceremonies of Vancouver 2010, and Shane Coison. He does an anti-bullying slam poetry, like a poetry essay, and it is incredibly moving. Coison, I think, is K-O-Y-Z-E-N, something like that, Shane Coison. And I find myself pulling that out probably a couple times a year at least.
Yeah. That's amazing how some of those talks are, you can watch over and over and over again and still get tidbits. Like, it's not a TED talk, but it is Simon Sinek when he went on the rant about the millennials. Have you seen that one?
Yeah. Just watched it last week. Yeah.
And it just went viral, and he goes 15 minutes. The guy that's interviewed him, I don't even think he got two words in that 15 minutes. And there was so much truth to it that a lot of people don't even see or understand, but that was one. But my favorite from a TED Talks, it was John Wooden's. Never been a speaker ever to this day, nor do I think there ever will be again, that was actually able to do their TED talk sitting down.
Yes, I was going to ask.
They accommodated him because he was, you know, we had well since retired, but it was such an eloquent talk for like 17 minutes. And when he ends it, he goes, I hope you got a lot out of this. It was just brilliant. So
I just found in a Salvation Army the other day, one of his old books. I bought it for $1 just the other day, and I can't wait. It's next by my bed. I've always got 3 or 4 on the go, so I got to take it easy and get into them one at a time. But the most interesting, my takeaway from the Simon Sinek about millennials was, he's a little bit hard on them in reality, but then he says, you know, largely to do with the failed parental philosophy of, right. And I know that you and I have talked about that a lot before, the participation ribbon and whatnot, but we can take some, there was a lot to learn, and he was blaming our parent generation just as much as the challenges that the new generation is facing and have lots to offer. And Jason Dorland, leadership speaker, former Olympic rower out of Victoria. I asked him the other day about working with people in their late teens and early 20s. And he said, I have all the time for them in the world. Because I said so as a coach, shouldn't be good enough. It should never have been good enough.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to be able to answer why. If we can't answer why, we're unprepared. Right. While we are challenged and feel a bit defensive when kids say, why are we doing this? Well, if we've thought it through and we have a great answer, it's probably a great idea, right? And so that changed my position on this generation too, is that because I said so should never have been a good enough excuse.
Well, that's, I've been preaching that 15 years. You have to have the why going into anything. And that's, one of the questions I ask, what do you do, but why do you do it? And kids in any practice, we're always going to want to know, well, why are we doing this skill? And you probably get that a lot when you run just skills only. You're not really focused on the strategies, but giving them an analogy. Okay, you know, when you do this, you need to do this. And that's a key takeaway that every kid, and going up into their late teens, they want to know the answers, right?
Yeah. I try to use stories there. Hey, can you imagine your favorite player X, in the playoffs last night doing this or that? Or try to give a female example when we have girls in our co-ed groups, right? And give them that context, and then it sets up for they won't want to do what you do, but why you do it exactly. And so using stories or analogies really kind of helps them put that, give it a frame of reference.
Yeah, and it brings it into their world instead of it being in your world.
Yeah.
Next question: what would be your tip for coaches that are just kind of getting started out, aka the newbies, first few years, to help them shave 5 years off their learning curve?
Yeah. Great question. Volunteer and get involved with groups that are diverse. If you can handle a diverse group, when we have a coach coming out tonight who's volunteering to help us out at the Oval, and we have a 6-year age gap on the ice, and we can manage that, and you realize how to teach a skill and then how to modify that instruction based on the player you're talking to in the moment. I think the more diverse the group, you're really challenged as a coach. And then of course, be humble and be happy to say less and watch more and get on the ice or get on the field with a coach you believe in and listen and learn. I think as young coaches, we sort of come in with our chest out a little bit, trying to prove that we can do it out of necessity in the world that we're in a little bit. But if we can acknowledge that I would much rather learn on the go from someone who's going to delegate things over the course of the season to empower me, I think that combination is dynamite, and you can definitely shave off a number of years rather than think you know everything when you get in.
So the latter part, when you're talking about reaching out to others for mentorship, who have you sought or looked out to or reached out to do that for yourself and or recommend to others?
Yeah, I've been very lucky growing up I grew up in a household of a coach and a teacher. And so I've always tried to bring a teacher's approach to coaching. So number one, had I grown up in a household with carpenters, I would be heck of a lot handier with my hands. I had the pure luxury of my parents and their friends being coaches and teachers. So my father, my mother, which is very, very lucky to say that. And then, of course, a few of my father's closest friends, Andy Murray, coached 20 years in the NHL, Glenn Williamson, coaches in Europe and in Hungary right now, and really helped me see the joy that kids need to have, and he still has it on the ice at 65 years old with the kids. That's the juice, baby. That's what he always says about the feeling of a one-timer coming off a player's stick. He says, celebrate it. Don't expect it. Celebrate it when you see it, because that's the juice, baby. That's what gets him out of bed in the morning to come down to the rink and make that happen. So I love that. He's just got a big smile on his face all the time. Mike Johnson, head coach and GM in Portland, when they say things, I listen. And that's another bit of advice, when you're around those people, listen and write it, right? They know you have stories and they know you want to tell your stories, but there's a time and a place. And when we have the opportunity to listen and learn from those wiser and further down the path, we'll benefit.
Well, I don't know which analogy it is, because I've heard so many people spin it about Claire Drake and or John Wooden. Both of them, you know, the Canadian John Wooden and then the John Wooden. But well after both of them retired, they were still going to conferences and still writing pages and pages and pages of notes. And when people approach them and ask them after the fact, you know, why are you doing that? It's because I may learn something. And that always sticks with me because the unfortunate reality in today's world is new sports coaches sometimes think that once they've done the weekend clinic or taken a few courses that they're good to go for the rest of their lives. But the best of the best were still learning well beyond their point when they're retired. And like the analogy, the 65-year-old coach that still loves and that analogy, that's where the greatness comes out of. So that kind of precurses my next question. What are the top three characteristics of the greatest coach that you ever had?
Willingness to learn, willingness to smile with the players, and knowing when to draw the line. Willingness to learn. Andy Murray says in a video interview I did with him years ago, if you're not learning in this game, you're moving backwards. I interviewed an entrepreneur the other day who talked about some incredible mentors that he has, and he says they're always willing to learn. And if you stop learning in your industry, whatever it is, you're dead. And number two, being willing to smile with the players. That also means you're able to, you know, have a laugh at yourself when maybe you're wrong and when you've made a mistake. That's the buy-in anyways. Athletes want to know you're real. They want to know your care. And if you can smile with them, then they see that. And knowing when to draw the line, you can't be their best friend. My father always says, never fall in love with your players. You want to love your players, but you have to know when to draw the line. And that's that idea of the parent philosophy, parents wanting to be best friends with their kids. You want to love your kids, but you can't be best friends with them. You have to know when to draw the line because athletes will push you. Athletes will challenge you. And they want to know that you have boundaries, but they want to know that you'll let them in as well.
Okay. Great answer. So resources that you've got going on, there's probably many, but how would people find it and what resources are you trying to endorse or promote now? I.e. website, social media, blogs, videos.
Yeah. I'll try and be as concise. Started a new reading list, natelesley.ca/I recommend. And that is a link to a lot of books. And I'm trying to read ones that are valuable in multiple parts of my life. So essentially life leadership and motivation, it crosses over to sport. I enjoy that just as much as specifically sport coaching books. So natelesley.ca/I recommend. For any hockey players watching, we've crunched a ton of content and learning to help coaches really understand the nuances of the game at howtoplayhockey.ca. And finally, our blog where we post a lot of those samples and a lot of my thoughts, more coaching specific, is at lgsports.ca.
How do you manage all three of them? Because I'm also in the same boat. I'm managing all these different platforms, social media. It can be a little overwhelming at times.
Yeah, you know what? I really enjoy that side. I've learned so much in my life as an entrepreneur that I'm a bit addicted to that learning. And it is a vortex that I can go down. I love as much being on my own working on that stuff and then getting to totally switch gears and get to the field or get to the ice and engage with kids or other coaches. So, you know, the same way that we want our coaches to learn, podcasts, following blogs, Googling it when you're stuck, learning from people smarter than me. But definitely it's a lot to take on, but now I'm trying to outsource as much of it, as certain aspects of it as I can, so that I can stay on top of everything.
Great. Well, I think you've answered all the questions and you actually did it quicker than I anticipated.
Well, we stayed kind of on track then. That's
good. Yeah, we stayed kind of on track. I want to thank you for all the insight. It's great. And every time I talk to you and you're starting to share all these little different directions that you're going in, I guess as a last takeaway from my side of it, I'll give kind of the viewers the reason why I connected with Nate in the first place. Way back when my son was going down the competitive hockey stream, wanted to continue working on his skills. We weren't getting enough skill development in that stream. We connected, and I'll never forget day one or day two when you're running the second year, I believe, of the Richmond Oval program.
Yeah.
And our first conversation is when I approach you and say, hey, you know, my son, because he'd come home and he complained to me, the dad, I'm bored to tears. These guys I'm on the ice with, I'm skating circles around them. So I said, well, you know, instructor knows what he's doing, blah, blah, blah. But he was really adamant. Remember when I had the conversation that, you know, is there any chance that he could skate with the older players because he's bored of the younger ones? And what did you tell me at that point? You remember that conversation? The reason I'm putting this out there, this is the conversation that coaches are having every day with parents, putting pressure on those coaches. And I was one of those people like 10 plus years ago doing that.
I hope I told you something about examples of top level players training with younger kids, NHL guys, and still getting tons out of it. No, it doesn't matter who's around. It's about what you're doing in your moment, when it's your turn, so to speak, challenging yourself. We're trying to teach players to learn how to push themselves.
Yeah, it was pretty much bang on. And then that's soon after when you came and helped us out with my Bantam team. And then the where I'm going with this is the final close. The players on my Bantam team, about three or four ice sessions in when Nate was coming on the ice and working on his skills, they nicknamed him Nate the Great, like appropriately. And that's been his nickname, my son's nickname for him for many, many, many years. He's one of the greatest people that I know and also one of the greatest mentors of kids that I know. And that's the whole reason why I wanted him to be part of the summit. So thanks for all your time, Nate. I really appreciate it.
Hey, what you guys are doing is so important, and I know it's a long game, and but you know, 15 years ago I could have chosen a different route to chase the dollar, and I decided not to, and it's the best decision that I ever made. You got to go with what's in your gut, and there's a need for your voice and everything that you guys are doing. And don't worry, people are listening, right? And it will grow. And so many parents that we talk to are looking for that voice and wondering, gee, is it only this other crazy way? And say, no, it doesn't have to be. So keep it up.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG conference, and for loveofthegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.